Chapter 26. As the exquisite Death sped in-system, shedding velocity and swinging into Mirker's gravity well, the planet swelled from a greenish pinpoint to an emerald disk the size of a thumbnail. Though Anakin did not recall the world having a moon, the pearly fleck hanging beside it was too bright to be a background star and too steady to be an optical illusion. He turned to the sensor station, where Lobaka sat with his emergency vac suit pulled over his jumpsuit, his head buried in a cognition hood, and his huge hands squeezed into a pair of control gloves. "Lowy, anything?" Anakin asked. The Wookiee groaned a reply, which MTD, hovering alongside, translated as, "Master Lobaka continues to apply his best efforts and assures you he will inform you the moment he succeeds." Anakin knew well enough what Lobaka had really said, but he did not remark on the gentle editing or unnecessary translation. Not everyone knew the language, and MTD insisted it was his duty to make certain the whole strike team understood Lobaka as well as he did them. Lobaka growled something short, and MTD added, "He also wishes me to suggest that frequent requests for information only interrupt his concentration." "I know," Anakin said. "Sorry." Though the strike team had quickly mastered most of the exquisite Death's systems, having studied all available data on Yuuzhan Vong vessels, and even experimented with a captured assault boat, the sensors remained a problem. In contrast to the externally oriented observation technologies of the New Republic, the Yuuzhan Vong gathered information by analyzing the infinitesimal distortions that the gravity of distant objects caused in the ship's internal space-time. Given that the galaxy's finest scientists were still struggling to comprehend the basic science of Yuuzhan Vong sensors, it was no wonder Lobaka was having difficulties operating them. Even with Tahiri at his side translating and providing insight into how Yuuzhan Vong fought. When Anakin looked back to Mirker, the planet had grown to a cloud-mottled circle the size of Yulaha's head. The gray fleck beside it was now a tiny disk. "Definitely a moon," Anakin said. At this distance, he could not expect to feel anything through the lambent crystal, but he knew what he was seeing. "A Yuuzhan Vong moon." Lobaka let out a victorious growl, and MTD reported, "Master Lobaka feels it is indeed a Yuuzhan Vong world ship." Lobaka grunted and yowled a few more times, and the translation droid added, "There are several Corvette analogs in orbit around it, though the diameter is quite large for a world ship, approximately 120 kilometers. "That was as large as the first Death Star." Anakin whistled softly to himself, then reached out toward the distant fleck with the Force. Not one to rule out the possibility of coincidence, he was nevertheless suspicious enough of it to inspect it carefully. He felt an all-too-familiar stirring, the feral agitation of a Voxen, but also something else, another presence full of terror and pain, and surprise. A clear, sharp presence, not hazy. Jedi, not Yuuzhan Vong. Anakin did not realize he had gasped until a hand took his arm and Alima asked what was wrong. Not answering, he continued to focus on the world ship. The presence touched him back, still full of pain and fear, but now also pity. Not for itself, he thought, but for him. He filled his heart with comforting emotions, trying to project an aura of confidence and hope, though he knew the vagaries of the Force might not be capable of conveying the message he wanted. The presence at the other end maintained contact for only a moment longer before abruptly withdrawing, closing itself off to Anakin without any hint of whether it had comprehended what he was trying to communicate. Tahiri clasped his arm. "Anakin?" "There are Jedi there," he said, "with the Voxen." "Well, that puts Plan A right out the lock," Ganner said. Plan A called for them to sneak as close as possible to the cloning facility and destroy it with the Baradium-packed missile, then use the resulting confusion to confirm the Queen's destruction and escape. "We'll have to try something else."
"That is very brave, of course," Alima said.
Standing beside the commander's chair opposite Tahiri, she laid a hand on Anakin's arm and turned to him with a look of entreaty.
"But if we forego our best plan, we stand to lose more Jedi than we would save."
Jason emerged from the back of the bridge, his eyes rolling at the Twi'lek's pouty tone. Halima, I think Anakin knows what's at stake here.
I can handle this, Jason, Anakin said, doing his best to keep the irritation out of his voice. And there's no need to remind me about the dark side. I understand the consequences of killing our own.
Anakin, I only meant, shouldn't you be at your battle station? Anakin asked, deliberately cutting Jason off. He cast a meaningful look at both Halima and Tahiri.
Shouldn't everyone?
Jason's face reddened, and Tahiri's eyes narrowed, but all three retreated to their assigned places and left Anakin to his thoughts. This was one of those times Lando had warned them about, when any choice he made felt like the wrong one. But Lando did not have the force to guide him, and Anakin still had a few minutes before he had to decide anything. If he waited, maybe things would work out for the better. They almost always did.
Jaina swung the exquisite death into an approach pattern, and the edge of Mirker's enormous green disk began to slide across the port side of the bridge. From space, at least, there was no visible sign of Yuuzhan Vong planet shaping. It remained the same steam-shrouded forest world depicted in holovids. The world ship was rapidly filling the viewing dome, swelling from a little smaller than a Kuwati banquet plate to the size of a high-command conference table. A thin halo of twinkling stars hinted at the escape of radiant heat, while blotchy circles of gray and brown began to define the planetoid's pocked surface. Expecting the hailing villip in front of him to activate at any moment, Anakin waved Tahiri close, then used the hollow shroud unit on his equipment harness to cloak himself in the pre-recorded image of a Yuuzhan Vong warrior. Whether the tattoos and scarrings were appropriate for the commander of a corvette analog vessel was anybody's guess. There seemed to be the right amount, but New Republic intelligence was still struggling to learn the significance, if any, of individual patterns. Lobaka moaned a warning from the sensor console, informing Anakin that a trio of Yuuzhan Vong corvettes had just appeared from the far side of Mirker and were lining up for approach behind the exquisite death. Anakin ordered Jaina to continue as before. Though her face was hidden beneath the pilot's hood she wore to interface with the vessel, he could feel her apprehension. Not knowing the proper procedure for entering a Yuuzhan Vong base, they had opted to try an open approach, trusting that procedural mistakes would prove less alarming than a furtive advance. Jaina rolled them to starboard and angled into line behind a string of dark specks drifting across the face of the world ship, now so large that it completely filled the dome. Anakin and Yulaha activated a holocam and began feeding mapping information to her data pad. The long journey between galaxies had left the massive spacecraft dilapidated and spent. A few black, jagged scars denoted breaches in the outer shell, but most of the planetoid seemed a mottled patchwork of gray dust and jagged yoric coral. A sparse network of surface utility lanes curved along the surface, occasionally converging in starburst intersections or vanishing down the dark mouth of an interior access portal. The world ship still did not hail them, and the back of Anakin's neck began to prickle with danger sense. No New Republic base would allow any ship to approach so closely without making contact. Jaina maintained her spacing behind the other ships, following them around the curve of the planetoid. A complex of cone-shaped gracial peaks appeared on the horizon, protruding up through the outer shell, a little to the starboard of the long line of vessels they were following. Even with the naked eye, Anakin could see that the buildings emerged from the surface close to the city-sized square of a huge black pit. "Maxmag that, Yulaha," he said. "What's it like?" Yulaha turned her holocam on the complex and increased the magnification.
"It appears to be some kind of spaceport," she wheezed.
Though the Bith was much improved after her healing trance, she remained weak and colorless.
"There is a large pit surrounded by many entrances, with what look to be loading facilities."
"Abandoned, empty," Yulaha corrected.
"No vessels in sight, but the landing pads are stacked with cargo pods and cages."
Anakin reached out to the facility with the Force. He no longer felt the pained presence he had noticed before, but the hungry stirring of Voxen was still powerful.
The tingle in the back of his neck became a nettling, and, noting that their current approach would keep them well away from the complex, he suddenly understood why the world ship had not yet hailed them.
"They're trying to lead us into a trap. Jaina, turn toward that complex now."
Anakin activated the comlink. "Ganner, you and Tisar, ready that missile. Stand by for targeting coordinates. Everybody, secure your vac suits. We're in for a rough ride."
As Jaina swung the ship around, Lobaka rumbled an alarm.
"Oh, dear," MTD chirped at Anakin's collar.
"Master Lobaka says there's a cruiser.
I heard him,"
Anakin said.
A distant ovoid of Yorick coral floated over the horizon, moving to position itself between the exquisite death and what Anakin now felt certain was the loading area for the cloning complex. Lobaka warned that the corvettes coming from Mirker were accelerating and spreading out, and the half-dozen vessels they had been following were turning toward the cruiser. When MTD attempted to repeat this information in basic, Anakin switched him off. One of the small villips next to the ship's hailing villip suddenly pushed through its aversion orifice, taking the shape of a lumpy Yuuzhan Vong head ringed around the brow by goiter-like growths.
"Gadmadar, Ganner Rysod."
Anakin turned to Tahiri for a translation, but the villip began to speak in basic before she could supply it.
"Stroke the hailing villip, Jedi, so that we can speak."
Before obeying, Anakin said, "Jaina, continue on course. Loey, get a targeting lock on that cruiser and feed the coordinates to Ganner and Tisar."
The Yuuzhan Vong grew impatient.
"It should be the leathery disk next to this one, Jedi."
Anakin stroked the appropriate villip. Instead of averting, its central orifice opened and extended toward him a short tentacle with a black eye at the end. The Yuuzhan Vong, or rather his villip, raised his brow and started to demand something in his own language, then caught himself and smiled.
"Very good, Ganner Rysod. I see we are not the only ones who use maskers."
Seeing no reason to disabuse an enemy of his mistake, Anakin left the hollow shroud on.
"I'm sure this is more than a social call, shipmaster.
Commander," the officer corrected. "It is my obligation to recover the vessel you have stolen."
"Stolen?" Anakin asked. "We're just borrowing it. You can have it back when we finish."
The commander's villip went blank for a moment, then frowned.
"I fear it is needed now. Surrender to the Matalak ahead, and you will be the only one who suffers for the misuse of the exquisite death."
Anakin glanced through the bridge dome and saw an ovoid as long as his arm. The distance between the vessels had to be no more than a dozen kilometers, and still the cruiser had not opened fire. Perhaps the commander had dreams himself of presenting Sabong La with 17 Jedi. Or perhaps he did not think his cruiser had much to fear from a ship as small as the exquisite death. Lobaka growled a report saying there were half a dozen coral skippers and as many corvette analogs moving into position over the cloning facility.
"It would be futile to make my Matalak attack, Jedi," the commander warned. "My trap was well laid, and the War Master has said that if we must open fire, the Talfalian hostages are forfeit."
"Has he?"
Anakin opened his emotions to the others so they would be ready for what he intended.
"I see we have no choice."
Hoping Luke had everything ready on his side of the galaxy, Anakin snatched his lightsaber from his belt and, thumbing the ignition switch, slashed the hailing villip apart.
"Full ahead, Jaina."
He activated his comlink.
"Ganner target cruiser. Set fuse to proximity. Fire when ready."
"Missile loose."
The report came almost before the order was finished, but it took Anakin until the missile flashed past to realize Ganner had known what Anakin intended. The strike team had established its battle meld automatically, perhaps even unconsciously, as soon as the likelihood of combat became apparent. The missile's unexpected appearance confused the Yuuzhan Vong for only a few seconds. A flurry of plasma balls boiled out to intercept the missile, causing the droid brain to activate its countermeasure program. The missile diverted some of its power to shields and continued toward its target in an evasive corkscrew. Anakin did not need to tell his sister to circle around the target,
Radium was the same substance that made thermal detonators such fearsome weapons, and the missile was carrying enough of the explosive to equip an entire assault division. The Yuuzhan Vong gunners tried in vain for another few seconds to hit the spiraling target, then gave up and turned the ship's defense over to the shielding crews. A black dot appeared half a kilometer from the ship and sucked the missile toward its doom. As soon as the droid brain detected the existence of a shielding singularity, it used its guidance laser to measure the distance to target, calculated that 98% of the mass fell within its blast radius, and triggered 1,000 kilograms of baradium. The cruiser vanished in a blinding sphere of white fire that resembled, for a few seconds, a 1 kilometer sun. The exquisite death shook beneath the shockwave. Then Ganner's voice came over the comlink.
"What now? Plan D?"
"Sort of." Anakin looked toward the cloning compound and saw a dozen Yorick coral flecks swarming over the buildings. They were not coming out to attack, so it seemed apparent they were conserving their energies and would not open fire until the exquisite death reached point-blank range. Given the likelihood of a miss hitting the Corvette analogs streaking in behind the death, it seemed a wise strategy. "Here's what I want." Anakin had barely described his plan before Yulaha held out her data pad.
"What's that?"
"I must be the one to stay with the ship," she said. Anakin felt his sister's alarm as acutely as his own.
"No offense, Yulaha," Jaina said, "but you're hardly up to something like this."
"Perhaps not, but I am a pilot, and the exquisite death is hardly a starfighter."
Yulaha pressed the data pad into Anakin's hand.
"As stated, your plan has a 21% success probability, with a casualty projection in excess of 90%. Without me to burden you on the ground, your success probability rises to almost 50%.
"That high?"
Anakin did not even want to hear the casualty projections.
"Okay, but just drop 2-1S's shuttle and go."
"Do you need anything?" Yulaha thought for a moment, then said,
"If there is time, I would like a length of metal tubing from the droid kit. Leave it in the corridor.
Count on it."
Anakin wanted to hug her, or shake her hand, or something, but that all seemed so final, so irrevocable. Instead, he sent Jaina after the rest of the team, already gathering in the first hold, then paused at the door valve and looked back.
"No heroics, Yulaha. That's an order.
Just drop 2-1-S and go." The Bith nodded at him.
"It's okay, Anakin. This is the right thing."
She turned away and reached for the cognition hood.
"Now hurry. Every minute of delay reduces the mission's success probability by 0.2%.
Feeling a little lonely and hollow inside, Anakin rushed down the corridor into the first hold, where the Jedi were already packing themselves and their equipment into 5 Yuuzhan Vong cargo pods. He left the tubing in the corridor for Yulaha, then sealed the hold door and turned to join the others. Zek was packing Tisarun with Ganner, Jovan, and Tenel Ka.
"You are sure we have enough thermal detonators?"
Tisar rasped.
"We are going to need many detonators for the Voxen."
"I packed all 4 cases." Zek pushed the pod shut.
"Only 4?
Tisar demanded. Zek shook his head, then sealed the seam with a glob of Blorash jelly and motioned Anakin into a pod with Raynar, Errol, and Tahiri. "We're the last. I thought it best to separate families and equipment." There was no need to explain the precaution. Anakin nodded, then pulled up his vac suit hood and crouched beside Tahiri, opposite Errol and Raynar. Zek squeezed in beside Anakin, then lit a glow stick and sealed the seam from the inside. The exquisite death continued forward unopposed for what seemed an eternity, and through the battle meld, Anakin felt Yulaha's anxiety slowly giving way to bewilderment.
"They are coming out to meet us, but they do not fire," Yulaha calmed. "Now they are spreading out, and arrest tentacles are extending from the noses of some ships."
"They're still trying to take us alive," Anakin gasped. "Why risk so much?"
"They are aliens," one of the Barabel sisters calmed. "There is no sense trying to understand them."
The exquisite death swung sharply to port, then lurched back onto course,
dipped sharply, and began to jink like a fighter.
"You must start the drop," Yulaha calmed.
The ship began to shudder.
"They are shooting tentacles at us."
"Projected drop zone 2 kilometers from spaceport at bearing 122. 2-1-S reported from the shuttle. "Surprise likelihood high." Anakin gave the go order, and Yulaha put the exquisite death into a coral-crackling climb. At the end of the long line of cargo pods, 2-4-S used his blaster cannon to open a makeshift bomb bay, and the hull decompressed with a tremendous roaring. Anakin's pod began to slide across the floor toward the breach.
"Decoy away,"
2-4-S calmed. Anakin's pod, number 5, slid toward the hole faster.
"Pod 1 away."
There was a moment of silence, then 2-4-S reported, "Enemy arrest tentacle has captured decoy pod." Anakin held his breath. He had intended the decoy to detonate on the ground, but as long as it convinced the Yuuzhan Vong they were dropping bombs instead of a strike team. A burst of static crackled across the comlinks, then 2-1-S's barely audible voice said, "Decoy detonation. Heavy damage to enemy vessel." The barabels sissed over the comm channel.
"Pod 2 away,"
2-4-S reported. "Pod 3, Anakin did not hear the next report, for a tremendous growling reverberated through their pod as it scraped over the edge of the hole and fell free. His stomach grew queasy with weightlessness, and all 5 of them began to float.
2-4-S away,
2-4-S reported. Tahiri grabbed Anakin's arm, and Arrow began an audible countdown. Anakin opened himself to the force as completely as possible, alert to any emotion that might suggest the others had been grabbed by an arresting tentacle or targeted by a defensive blast of plasma. He sensed only apprehensions similar to his own, except from the Barabels, who were radiating the emotional equivalent of a big yippee. Finally, Arrow said,
15 seconds.
Mark. According to calculations, at least, they were now only 1,000 meters above the surface of the world ship. Anakin caught their vessel with the invisible hand of the Force, cushioning their descent just enough so that the deceleration kept them pinned to the floor. The war droids had calculated that a deceleration of approximately 1.5 standard gravities would not be overly noticeable, yet the resulting landing would be 99% survivable. Anakin remained silent through the descent, wishing that he could see the surface, or feel the non-existent atmosphere buffeting them, or anything. After a few more seconds, he decided that they had to be almost down and began to slow their descent still further. And then the bone-jarring shock of impact slammed everyone to the floor. They went weightless as the capsule bounced, then came down on their side and rolled more times than Anakin could count before coming to a rest in a jumbled tangle. Anakin used the Force to move the others off him, then ignited his lightsaber and hacked through the blur-ash jelly seam. He had barely opened a fist-sized hole before Zek and the others activated the delay on 4 grenades and used the Force to push them up through the crack. 2 seconds later, a roiling fireball erupted 50 meters overhead. Hoping the explosion would look realistic enough from a distance, Anakin finished opening the pod and stepped out into a dusty basin of brown, dead Yorick coral. Perhaps 3 meters deep, the bowl was easily 300 long and 100 wide. Probably not an impact crater, but the scar of some ancient mishap. In the far corner, almost directly opposite Anakin, sat the broken husk of a distant cargo pod, a group of minuscule figures scurrying around its base. One of the Jedi felt him watching and waved in greeting. Then all 4 turned and started in his direction. A moment later, the pod vanished in the brilliant flare of a thermal detonator. Anakin's attention was drawn skyward by a flash of movement. He looked up in time to see a small, unidentifiable shape arc into the near corner of the field, then erupt in a tremendous fireball. Thinking they were under fire from a Yuuzhan Vong warship, he almost dived for the ground, but stopped when he saw the black star-spangled camouflage armor of a Tendrondo Arms YVH-S-series war droid emerged from the dust cloud and come toward him at an impossibly fast run. Anakin assigned Reynar and Errol to unload their pod, and sent Zek to the basin rim to reconnoiter.
then took a moment to concentrate on the others. He sensed a couple of fuzzy heads and a few aches and pains, but the team appeared to be 99% intact, just as the droids had promised. Anakin retrieved the electro-binoculars and turned them overhead. Without the blue glow of streaking ion drives to draw attention to the ships, it took a moment to locate the space battle, which had already drifted far across the sky toward Mirker. YVH-21S was just parting ways with Yulaha, his lumpy black shuttle corkscrewing wildly back toward the world ship as the Bith veered off into deep space in the exquisite death. To Anakin's disappointment, the Yuuzhan Vong had swallowed the bait only partially. The coral skippers and four corvettes were surrounding 21S's shuttle, arrest tentacles lashing out to capture the careening rock. But the rest of the Yuuzhan Vong were pursuing the death. A pair of heavy steps came up beside Anakin. Then Ganner said over the vac suit comnet, "We're good to go, Anakin. We have the bearings to the spaceport, and 24S's sensors show no sign they realize we're here." Anakin lowered the electro-binoculars and turned away. He would have liked to stay and see whether they escaped. They deserved that much. But he knew neither 21S or Yulaha would want that. Every minute of delay reduced the mission's success probability by 0.2%. The strike team had traveled only 500 meters when 24S's metallic voice came over the comm channel. 21S reports zero survivability rating. Now optimizing. An orange fireball blossomed in the sky, drowning the droid's last two words in a tempest of electronic interference. Anakin raised the electro-binoculars in time to see a trio of enemy corvettes burst into white sprays of Yorick coral. The fourth vessel, a mere splinter at this distance, spiraled away out of control. "Loss ratio optimized," 24S reported. Anakin nodded and said, "Maximum efficiency." They all knew from the training sessions with 11A that it was the highest tribute that could be made to one of Lando's droids, and several Jedi repeated the compliment. They continued toward the spaceport, using the Force to smooth the dust behind them and keep it from billowing into the airless sky. A few minutes later, 24S detected two coral skippers approaching. The strike team had to conceal itself beneath the dust and wait as the pair swept over in a slow, curving search pattern. Once the pilots reached the drop zone, they would find four huge baradium craters and nothing to suggest the exquisite death had dropped anything but four poorly targeted bombs, and they would return to base laughing at their enemy's incompetence. Until then, the Jedi would have to wait and be patient. Though no one said as much, all of their thoughts were on Yulaha alone in the exquisite death, with five corvette analogs and a host of skips on her tail. Though the Bith was growing more distant in the battle melt, Anakin could feel her consumed with the tasks at hand, weary and in pain, but without fear. At peace, even. Daring to hope Yulaha's tranquility meant she was escaping, Anakin raised the electro-binoculars as soon as the search craft were gone, and combed the darkness above for the exquisite death. But it was an impossible task. Even if he were looking in the right direction, by now the Bith and her pursuers would be too distant for electro-binoculars to detect. The strike team resumed its march. Yulaha's presence continued to fade, then finally vanished altogether. Anakin could tell by the surge of anxiety in the battle melt that the same fear had leapt into the minds of all the Jedi. Tahiri asked, "Is she?" "No," Jason interrupted. "We would have felt that." "Maybe she jumped to hyperspace," Anakin said. 24S? "Negative," the droid reported. "Exquisite death still within sensor range." Then the music started, a reedy, haunting melody that came to Anakin inside his mind. Though there was a mournful hint to it, the strain was more tranquil than sad, and perhaps the most beautiful thing he had ever heard. He turned and found the others staring skyward, some with heads cocked, listening, others with a tear or two running down inside their face masks.
Exquisite death and pursuers decelerating, 24S reported. Analysis suggests tentacle arrest.
No one seemed to hear the report.
I wish...
Jaina fell silent as the song drifted into a flighty passage and began to gather energy.
I wish I could record this.
Yes, Jason said. I'm sure Teon would like it for her archives. It's a sad loss for the Jedi.
Anakin could not tell from his brother's flat tone whether Jason was criticizing or just saying aloud what they all felt.
There was no question of Yulaha surrendering the death. Even were she to survive the boarding party's initial assault, she could not endure another breaking. The music repeated its opening refrain, but more powerfully now and without any hint of sadness, then rose to a robust crescendo. In the sudden silence, Tahiri gasped.